Good morning. Welcome back to Nach Yomi. This morning we're going to be focusing on the 15th parak of Sefer Shmuel Beis. This is a terribly sad moment in Jewish history. This is the parak in which Avshalom takes control. So let's follow through the story, try to appreciate what's really going on over here. So after everything has happened, remember, Avshalom has got this sort of standoff ceasefire with his father. He's back in Yerushalayim. His father has given him a meeting and kissed him, but we saw that it wasn't a real embrace. Avshalom now starts seeking power for himself. So he gets a chariot with horses. He has 50 men running ahead of him. So he likes sort of presenting himself as a powerful person. And he'd sit at the gate of Yerushalayim. When people come up to the king to get judgment, he would speak to them and say, look, you're not going to get a hearing, you're not going to get a real listening to from the king, so why don't you tell me your case? And he'd ask them from where they're from, and he'd listen to them, and he would start taking cases of the people who come up for litigation in Yerushalayim. And in fact, the Tanakh tells us that he went so far that, you know, somebody would come to him, he'd grab them, and he'd give them a kiss. So like this embrace, this affection to these people, which would be his way in. And he slowly, as the Tanakh tells us, "Vayiganev Avshalom es leiv anshei Yisrael," that the people of Israel, their hearts were stolen by Avshalom. He really is obviously a very charismatic individual who's taking control now. Then at the end of 40 years, he turns to his father David, and David obviously still trusts him for some reason, and he says, I made a pledge, I made a neder to go to Hebron to pay off my sacrifice to Hashem. In Hebron, David HaMelech says, go in peace, and he sends him off. When he gets to Hebron, what Avshalom does is he tells everybody around, when you hear this particular sound, it's going to blow on the shofar, and everybody come together, and we're going to now make, the rebellion is going to start for real. And that's what happens. He blows the shofar, and two people come with him in a procession from Yerushalayim, and from all over the land, people now come to Avshalom. And people are coming innocently, people are coming with intent to join him, and there's an incredible crowd of followers of Avshalom. So Avshalom's army is building up, and the king hears about this. David HaMelech hears what's happening. Avshalom, in fact, has taken his prime advisor, Achitophel, has gone to the side of Avshalom. The people are siding with Avshalom. What does David do? David HaMelech makes a very hard decision to make, and he says to the people, we are not going to stay in Yerushalayim. We're not going to fight this battle. And he goes into exile before Avshalom even marches on Jerusalem. What does he do? So now the rest of the parak is dedicated to David HaMelech's decision about who stays and who comes. He leaves. He decides to leave his pilagshim, his concubines, in Yerushalayim, and he starts leaving Yerushalayim. And he takes 600 people, his original 600 troops who were from Gat when he was in the Philistine territory, and he starts leaving. And as he's leaving, he bumps into a bunch of people who have split loyalties. So the first person he bumps into is Ittai HaGitti, a person whose name Ittai, who comes from Gat originally. And David HaMelech says, you have two choices. You can either stay in Yerushalayim, because you're a foreigner to Yerushalayim, and maybe you'll be able to prove that you're not with me, or you can go back to your own country, but don't make a decision to come with me. And Ittai says he wants to come with David. Okay, then as they're leaving and as they're crying, Tzadok, who's the Kohen, and all the Levium start bringing out the Aaron to the Ark to go with David, and David says no, the Ark is going to stay. It's going to stay in Yerushalayim, and if I have the privilege and the grace of Hashem, I will return to Yerushalayim. David HaMelech tells Tzadok himself to stay in Yerushalayim, and he tells his sons, Achimatz and Yonatan, the son of Eviatar, to stay in Yerushalayim with the Aaron. Very fascinating decision that David HaMelech makes. And David now starts, in an act of mourning, he covers his face and he walks barefoot as in mourning for like sort of loss of monarchy, and leaves Yerushalayim. And as he's leaving, he meets a further last person whose name is Hushai HaErki. Hushai is obviously a friend of David, and he comes also in equal mourning garb and says to David, David HaMelech, well, I'm going to come with you. And David HaMelech says, no, you should return to the city and pledge allegiance to Avshalom when he arrives. And then whatever you hear about going on in the royal chambers, you tell the Kohanim, and this is David HaMelech's spy. He's his man on the inside, and Hushai stays. So really a fascinating parak on many levels. Unfortunately, a very sad parak. Let's just think about a few points to ponder was sort of bigger, holistic picture. Let's start at the beginning. So why is it that Avshalom suddenly makes this change? Why now? What happened that Avshalom decides that now is the moment to go for this power grab? So the Metzilas David says, well, once he's got acquitted from his father, once David HaMelech granted him an audience, kissed him, and gave him forgiveness, that's when now Avshalom takes that slack, takes that forgiveness, and now starts the rebellion. Personally, I would just wonder if maybe Avshalom realizes that David HaMelech is no longer interested in him. David HaMelech is so hurt by his killing of Amnon, and that Avshalom realizes there is nothing further to do, and that's what, that pain, that separation, now forces him into rebellion. Meaning to say, it was unfortunately what the realization that his father was never going to come around to him, that brought him into this position. Furthermore, it is interesting that everything he's doing when he claims to the people, you know, you're not going to have an ear of the king, and he kisses them. It's interesting, it's what he wanted so much from his father. He wanted his father to listen to him. He wanted his father to love him. But these are the things his father wasn't giving for him. His father was too hurt by the death of the murder of Amnon to give this to him. In a certain sense, he's giving the people who come to the gate what he wished his father would have given to him, which is a sad recreation of what was missing. Just a fascinating point as to look at this. This rebellion is dated 40 years. 40 years from what? It's not so clear. The Malbim points out it's either 40 years from the time that Bnei Yisrael asked for a king, and this is like sort of like pointing out, Tanakh is pointing out the dramatic irony that you asked for a king, and now look where you are now. Look what's happening. It's all falling apart. Or could also be 40 years from when David HaMelech becomes a king. We know David HaMelech was only a king for 40 years, which means that this is really towards the end of David HaMelech's career. Just as David HaMelech is really at the, you know, the end of his career, this is when this terrible trouble starts, and they continue from him here onwards. Nonetheless, why do you think Avshalom wanted his father's blessing? Meaning, like, why did he just leave to Hebron? Why did he ask David HaMelech permission to go to Hebron? So Rashi says that what is actually happening is that was part of the nefarious plan. He got from David, his father, an edict which gave permission and recommended that people accompanied Avshalom for his sacrifice in Hebron. Those people went innocently listening to David with Avshalom, and then were swayed by Avshalom Avshalom's plans when he arrived in Hebron. So he not only did he take his father's permission, he even took his father's people with his father's permission that came with him. Why? The big question we have to ask in this parak is, why is it that David HaMelech decided not to engage? Why not just stay and hold Jerusalem and fight? So Radak says, well, simple. David HaMelech realizes that the curse that was put upon himself for the sin of Bathsheba is coming upon him. And he realizes when he is being cursed, when the curse is unfolding, he may not be able to sustain that war. And so he's in earnest is really terrified. Whereas the Malbim says, no, he may have thought that he could have won, but you know what would have happened? There probably would have been a lot of civilian casualties. And you know what happens when there's civilian casualties in battle, as we see today? What does the enemy do? The enemy blames the defender. The enemy will blame the defense forces of Israel. They'll say, David HaMelech killed them all. And especially now, because at this point in time, it's not clear who's on Avshalom's side and who's on David's side and who's defected to Avshalom. So when all the bodies are being piled up and the count has been for the civil war of Jerusalem, Avshalom will say, look what David HaMelech did to you, thereby using that as further propaganda to undermine David's standing, which is, again, a very terrible and sad description over here. Last question, why did David HaMelech decide not to take the Aron? Meaning, wouldn't David HaMelech do it? Isn't that the center of Israel that's representing his power over Israel? So David HaMelech, according to the Malbim, says a very simple thing. He says, if I am going to be the king, then you know what? Hashem will allow me to return to Yerushalayim and I'll be able to come back to the Aron. If Hashem does not want me to be the king, I'm not going to force Hashem's hand by taking the Aron out of Yerushalayim and be decimated by Avshalom. So David HaMelech says, I'll leave God to play this one out. I'm going to do what I need to do. I'm leaving Yerushalayim to avoid the civilian casualties, to avoid a battle which I'm cursed in. And David HaMelech says, I'm going to leave it to Hashem to see what the next step is. We'll see what the next step is in the next two prakim over the next 2 days. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.